Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is endorsing a slate of reforms to the city's police department. Here he is speaking at City Hall just moments ago, accepting the final recommendations of the Boston Police Reform Task Force.
The task force shared draft recommendations last month. Now they've completed and shared with me their final recommendations. And as of today, I'm pleased to officially accept these recommendations, all of these recommendations.
Now, those recommendations include creating a new oversight office with investigatory and subpoena power and a new diversity and inclusion unit within the police department. Joining us now to discuss is one of the members of that task force, Javier Flores, is a partner at Dinsmore and Scholl. Javier, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on today.
Pleased to have you. There is a whole host of recommendations there, Javier, including new oversight office with full subpoena power, expanded use of body cameras, also some new language today focused on shifting responsibilities around mental health, substance use, and other social work-oriented issues to other departments. And I want to ask, what would you say are the most pressing of the recommendations and the ones that you're most excited to see implemented?
Well, you know, the four areas that we were tasked with looking at include, you know, what changes needed to be made to the Community Ombudsman Oversight Panel, the issues of diversity and inclusion within the BPD and implicit bias training, the use of force, and then the, you know, body-worn cameras. And we've come back with what we feel are fairly robust changes in each of those areas. And, you know, it's hard for me to weigh them in terms of what's the most prominent or the most important. I think that all four are essential changes that are needed to help drive forward and advance the BPD, to help promote equity in the policing that's provided within our community, and to help increase transparency so that we can improve relations and confidence between the BPD and the community members.
Is there a time frame, Javier, for implementation here? The mayor, you know, remarkably saying that he is embracing everything.
You know, we are thrilled with the support that we received today from Mayor Walsh. You know, he has done what we had hoped all along would be done, which is provide full support for the report. Additionally, you know, the commissioner's support as well. It's extremely important and promising that the changes that we're recommending are going to be implemented. You know, in the back of the report that was issued today, we provided a proposed timeline for the implementation that's fairly detailed in breaking down the elements of the report and when we feel is a reasonable timeline for them to be put into place. But I think that the overall range is everything within 180 days.
So let's talk about body cameras for a minute. Mayor Walsh committed to requiring Boston police officers to wear body cameras on overtime shifts a year ago. That has not happened. These proposed reforms go further than that. For example, making body camera video more publicly accessible. Do you have faith that the city can get that done with the Boston Police Department?
I do. You know, what we're seeing is, you know, changes that are being implemented across the country in response to what's been a movement, a racial justice movement in the wake of the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And I think that the strength of that movement, the persistence of that movement, it necessitates change. And this is a very easy change. You know, they're having body cameras available for all police and community interactions promotes the type of transparency that's needed, and if you're not doing anything wrong, then you should have nothing to hide. And the availability of that body camera footage, both to the police and to the community, you know, provides transparency and clarity when we have a disagreement about whether or not there was an excessive use of force or a discriminatory practice that was implemented.
I am struck by hearing you refer to it as an easy change. I mean, the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association actively fought the initial camera rollout, body camera rollout, took the city to court. We know that there are ongoing negotiations as the contract is being negotiated. You're not anticipating similar opposition to these further body camera reforms?
I'm not saying easy in that sense. I'm not an expert on the the relationships or the processes in terms of making changes that require the consent of the police union. I'm just saying that there are changes that can be implemented because the equipment is already in place, the policies are there, and the changes that can be made to them in order to promote and increase the use of body-worn cameras, can be done fairly easily.
So I want to ask you one other question. You mentioned a minute ago the big movement over the summer across the entire nation after the killing of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police around police reform. Our state house is still negotiating on police reform months after the House and the Senate passed bills. How important to the larger reform picture is combining the recommendations and the implementation that the mayor has committed to here with a larger police reform piece of legislation passed into law at the Commonwealth level?
It's extremely important. Obviously the scope of the changes that we're implementing, the breadth of those changes only reaches within the city of Boston. We would obviously hope to see similar changes implemented within departments throughout the Commonwealth. And in order for that to happen in an efficient and effective way, there needs to be some movement within the state legislature, and we hope that the recommendations of our task force, the work that we've done, can help to drive that change.
And that is Javier Flores, a partner at Dinsmore & Scholl and a member of the Boston Police Reform Task Force, whose recommendations were accepted by the mayor just this afternoon. Javier, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And listeners, tomorrow you'll hear from Shigan Itawu, co-founder of the Boston Police Camera Action Team, and we've reached out to the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association as well. Listeners, we need your help. As the pandemic wears on, we've been talking to lots of different folks from all over about their experiences, people like Robert Lewis Jr., who survived after being hospitalized with COVID-19, or Elizabeth Davis on how she felt forgotten as a home caregiver. They've been part of our new series, Living with Corona. Do you have a personal story about this pandemic? How has the virus changed your life this past year? Whether you're a working mom or out of work, a virtual student, or a loved one who's grieving, tell us your story. Or tell us about someone else you think we should feature. Email us. You can reach us at radioboston@gmail.com. That's radioboston@gmail.com. And thank you. This November, Massachusetts voters will decide on two statewide ballot initiatives: ranked choice voting and right to repair. Radio Boston will hold debates on each initiative to help give you the information you need to decide, and we will take your questions for both. Well, today is the first. We're tackling question two, ranked choice voting. A yes vote would implement a system of ranked choices in any primary or general election for state executive officials, state legislators, federal congressional and Senate seats, and certain county offices, where there are three or more candidates running. It would go into effect in 2022. A no vote would maintain the existing voting systems for those elections. Today, advocates on both sides of question two join us for a discussion brought to you by WBUR and the McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies at UMass Boston. And we'll be taking your questions on ranked choice voting throughout at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet at Radio Boston. I do want to note we will not be taking listener comments supporting one side or the other, just questions. Now, before we turn to representatives of each side, let's break down as clearly as possible how ranked choice voting works. Here to help us is the star of WBUR's video explaining the ballot question, WBUR's Simone Rios. Welcome back, Simone. Thanks for joining us. Do I have Simone? Okay. So, we do not have Simone Rios with us now, and I just want to let listeners know we are having an interesting day, some challenges with sound and control room. So this could happen a couple of times during the show. I apologize in advance. We do have Simone back now, so we're going to give this a second shot. Woo! Simone, hi.
Okay, here we go.
All right, let's do this, Simone. What is ranked choice voting, and if implemented, how would it work?
Yeah, so in a nutshell, it's a system where instead of voting for one candidate, as most of us always have, you rank your favorites down the ballot. So if there are three candidates in a race, you rank the ones you like in order of preference. So let's say one of them you don't like at all, so you don't vote for them. You really like one of them, and you would prefer the second one. So you rank your top number one and then the next number two. It only comes into play when no candidate breaks 50% of the vote in the initial round. And here's where it gets a little confusing to describe, but I promise you it's easy when you see it on paper. So again, if nobody gets 50% of the vote in the first counting, then the last place candidate is eliminated. And the people who voted for that candidate, their votes are reapportioned to the second, third, and fourth, however many choices there are. So again, it's one of those things that sounds really confusing, but it makes sense when you see it on paper.
Okay, so take us through maybe a local example that would be relevant here, Simone.
Yeah, so the Voter Choice Massachusetts, the group behind the ballot initiative, they estimate that roughly 4 in 10 races involving 3 or more candidates result in a winner who does not get a simple majority. They say that's not cool, you know, that it's undemocratic in a way. Several cases in recent political history. One is Congresswoman Lori Trahan. She won her primary with less than 22% of the vote. Similar margins in the win of the primary win of Jake Auchincloss, the congressional candidate running for Joe Kennedy's seat. His opponent, Auchincloss's opponent, Jesse Mermel, had this to say after the election.
We have to live up to a better standard if we're going to continue to say that every vote should count. And I can assure you that if the ranked choice voting campaign needs a new face, give me a call, guys. I got some time on my hands.
Yeah, so she likes it, and you can understand why. But, you know, one interesting kind of way to game this out is to think about, you know, the recent primaries. I mean, like, if you think of the primary election that saw Donald Trump, you know, as the Republican nominee, would that have happened if a ranked choice voting system were in place? And then if you think about, you know, the Democrats, could they have rallied around a more progressive candidate than Joe Biden, who in reality didn't have, you know, a huge margin of support, but he happened to be the single candidate with the most support among many. So it really could change things.
Okay, so should it pass, when would it go into effect?
2022, and it would be used in primary and general elections for statewide offices and some state and federal legislative positions.
Okay, and our neighbors to the north, Maine, passed ranked choice voting in 2018. A lot has happened in Maine since then. Any lessons that we can draw from for ourselves here?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a really interesting case because, you know, you have an incumbent Republican member of Congress who lost his seat to ranked choice voting. In that case, he actually got more votes in the first counting, but didn't top 50%. So it went to a second round of counting, and then the Democratic newcomer was able to get more support. So that, I think, in a lot of ways sort of set the battle lines for who supports ranked choice voting and who opposes it.
And are there identifiable patterns, Simone, on who tends to support and oppose ranked choice voting, especially along political party lines or ideological lines or any other lines?
I mean, that's the sense that I got from looking at this from the Maine perspective, is that, again, it ultimately favored Democrats. And you could debate various reasons as to why that happened. But, you know, I talked to the Republican who lost his seat. And his idea was that, you know, progressives are more likely to run multiple candidates in an election. So, you know, he cited these kind of one issue candidates who maybe will have Alexa talking to me in the background. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
So, you know, somebody who might be a pro marijuana candidate or a pro, you know, gay rights, whatever it might be. And that's his theory, is that more single issue candidates are likely to surface on the progressive side. And then those people will be more likely to vote for a Democrat as a second and third choice. And thus, the theory is that progressives are more likely to benefit from this system.
Well, thank you, Simone Rios from WBUR, for setting this up for us. I think you've set us up well to go into the debate. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
So now that we've set the table, listeners, pull up a chair with your questions. What do you want to know about how it works, the implications, how implementation would happen, pros and cons? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. And a reminder, we're taking questions from listeners, but we're going to limit comments for and against the ballot questions themselves to our guests. So let me introduce those guests now. Arguing for question two is Evan Falchuk, who is chair of the Yes on Two campaign and a board member of Voter Choice Massachusetts, the advocacy group Advancing the Ballot Initiative. Welcome to Radio Boston, Evan.
Appreciate the chance. Thanks for having me.
And arguing against question two is Jennifer Braceras, who's on the board of the Massachusetts Fiscal Alliance. We do want to note that Jennifer's also a regular commentator on Radio Boston. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, nice to be here.
Okay, and just a quick note about how a Radio Boston debate like this is going to work. We're going to treat this as a friendly, if maybe competitive, conversation. I'm not going to use a clock, but I am asking both respondents to try to keep your responses at any time to about a minute. I'll be posing questions to both of you, and I'll play traffic cop when necessary. The questions will be both those that we've prepared and that we receive from our listeners. We're going to start with one question to each of you before we go to a break, and then we'll return from the break for the bulk of our discussion, and I'll each give you about a minute to make a brief wrap-up statement at the end. So let's begin with that one question to each of you. Evan, I'm going to go to you first and just tell us straight up, why are you for question two and ranked choice voting?
Well, I'm for question two because we've got a lot of work to do in our country to rebuild our democracy. And ranked choice voting is a positive step in the right direction. You know, so many voters say that they are tired of feeling like they have to vote for the lesser of two evils. And ranked choice voting helps give voters more choices and a greater voice. Never have to worry about voting for someone who's a spoiler or feel as if your vote is being wasted. And, you know, it's not just me that supports ranked choice voting. We've been endorsed by, most recently, the Boston Globe, but an incredible bipartisan coalition, including Governor Patrick, former Governor Weld, Elizabeth Warren, Maura Healey, former Lieutenant Governor Terry Healey, former Republican Senate candidate Gabriel Gomez. So this is really about the voters and making sure that voters have the power to build consensus and have a greater voice in our politics.
Great. Thank you. And Jennifer, why are you against question two? And in your answer, if you could clarify whether you're opposed just to the specific ballot question or to ranked choice voting overall.
I'm not opposed to voting reforms, but I am opposed to ranked choice voting in particular. And the issue here is really whether we should scrap our current system, which we know is not perfect and has flaws, in favor of a system that won't necessarily solve the problems and may create more problems. Really, I think the question is, you need to look at both these two imperfect systems of voting, our current system and the ranked choice system that's on the ballot, and weigh the pros and cons and, you know, determine which system is simplest, is the least complicated, will increase access, and, you know, be easiest for voters to use. And in my view, between the two, the current system is the better of the two choices that are on the ballot. Now, there may be other choices that aren't on the ballot that we should talk about putting on the ballot. Right. But the current proposal for reform, I don't think solves the problems.
And again, if you have questions, it's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. So, Evan, before the break, you and Jennifer each explained why. Well, you explained why you're for question two. Jennifer, you explained why you're against it. I want to dive in further here. Evan, what is wrong with how we vote now? And how would ranked choice voting adjust that or solve for that?
Well, we have a lot of problems in our current voting system. One of the things it does is it creates incentives for all kinds of division, for partisanship, for extremism, desire of candidates to play to their base and not pay attention to the ordinary voter. and negative campaigning. Candidates that, like, I ran as an independent or back in 2014 for governor, and many voters said, you know, it'd be great to have independent candidates, but it's a waste to vote for them because they can't win. All of these problems are features of our current system. Ranked choice voting, while it doesn't fix all of them, is a great help to resolving those issues. It encourages consensus. It makes candidates reach out to people who disagree with them and find ways to agree. It makes candidates and lawmakers more accountable to voters. It reduces negative campaigning. And we have evidence of this from all over the world, including here in the United States. So it's a reform that helps solve so many of the issues we face in our country, and it's a needed upgrade to our democracy.
So, Jennifer, you said before the break that you're not actually opposed to voting reform, but to ranked choice voting. So do you agree
Correct.
With Evan's assessment of what's wrong with how we vote now, and where do you see a path for solutions?
Some of it. I mean, one of the problems that I think ranked choice voting tries to get at is these situations where the winning candidate or the nominee wins with less than a majority of support. So maybe the winner has 40% of the vote, which is more votes than any other candidate in the race. But, you know, the majority of people voted for somebody other than the person that's selected. The obvious answer to that problem, and it is a problem, is to have a runoff. That's the cleanest, least complicated way to solve that problem. What ranked choice voting does is it is essentially a runoff that occurs instantaneously behind closed doors. And it asks the voter to anticipate who the last two candidates out of a crowded field will be, and then to mark your ballots accordingly. But the problem is you can never know who the last two candidates will be. So, you know, if you take the most recent Democratic primary that occurred in the fourth, let's say you went in, or that was a multi-candidate field. Let's say there were four candidates that you liked and you ranked them in order of preference. But the other candidates were candidates that did not appeal to you, so you left them off entirely. If the four candidates that you ranked did not include either Jesse or Jake, the two finalists, right, the top two vote getters, then in the end, you as a voter wouldn't have had a chance to choose between them because your ballot would have been discarded before it got to that point. By contrast,
Jennifer,
I think it's an important clarification. If they had had a runoff between Jesse and Jake, then the voter who didn't initially like either of them enough to put them down would have a chance to go back and choose between them. So what ranked choice voting does, it cuts people out of the process who don't necessarily like the top two finishers.
Okay, thanks for that. And Evan, I did actually want to run the fourth congressional district scenario. So why don't you run that same scenario from your perspective? Then we'll hear you both on that one.
Well, in any race where you've got multiple candidates, there's pressure on people to drop out. We saw at least two candidates drop out because they were worried that they were splitting votes, you know, with others. We had many voters, I live in the fourth congressional district, who said, you know, they really were having trouble because they liked different people for different reasons. And, you know, we end up with a winner who has 22% of the vote, who, by the way, Jake Auchincloss is a big supporter of ranked choice voting, as are most of the other candidates in that race. But, you know, runoffs, as Jen mentioned, they're not on the ballot this year. Runoffs feature drop off in turnout between the first election and the second one of as much as 35%. They're expensive to run. In the scenario that Jen is raising in terms of having runoff elections, you'd have four elections every time around. A first election and a runoff in the primary, and a first election and a runoff in the general. So it's interesting. I mean,
I'm not sure I understand that, because if you wound up with two candidates in the general, why would there be another runoff?
No, there would be well, you could have multiple candidates. You could have independents running. You could have all sorts of things happening like that. So it
depends on how you do it, Tiziana, because there are some places like Georgia is having right now what they call a jungle primary, where there are a number of Republicans and Democrats running at the same time. And so it's not party specific. So that's another potential reform that could solve the problem, but it doesn't force the voters to anticipate ahead of time who the top vote getters will be.
Okay, Adam, I'm going back to you to and finish up your point, and then we'll go to calls.
Yeah, none of this is on the ballot. And I'll note that Mass Fiscal Alliance, that Jen's here representing, has not lifted a finger on voting reform issues other than to support Citizens United recently. So there are thousands of volunteers across Massachusetts that have been working for years to implement this reform. And it's clear it's not perfect, but it does make things better.
Okay, so 1-800-423-8255 or 800-423-8255 talk to ask a question. Panelists, one of you, I was getting some background noise there from you, so just heads up that that's coming over the line. Let's go to Alex in Brighton. Alex, are you there?
Hi there, yes.
Go ahead with your question, please, Alex.
So I had a question for Jennifer. In the ad to the show, had stated that the ranked choice voting is too complex for the voters. And I wanted to ask how so, and how is that statement not rather insulting to the voters' intelligence?
Sure. Right, well, Jennifer, let me start with the second piece. Yeah, I mean, it's confusing to me, and I'm a pretty sophisticated voter with a Harvard law degree. And it's confusing for two reasons. Number one, the ballots themselves are confusing in terms of the way you bubble in the numbers. And they won't be confusing to everybody, but they will be confusing to some people, just the way that the butterfly ballots in Palm Beach, Florida, were confusing to elderly people and English language learners. These ballots will be confusing in the same way, and they are. We've seen that. There are studies that show that people in certain categories tend to get confused by these ballots. But they're also confusing because you have to strategize about how you are going to cast your vote. So in the example I gave before, you need to have a lot of information about a lot of candidates, and you have to understand what it means to not vote for somebody at all. So if one of the candidates is somebody who's really deplorable to you, that you don't want to give your vote to, you need to understand that if you leave that person off the ballot, then your, you know, if you leave people off the ballot, your ballot can become exhausted, and meaning that it won't count. So there is a strategy to it, and there are a number of situations in which ranking your candidates 1 through 7, you know, by ranking a certain candidate 4th or 5th, you could actually end up knocking out your first choice candidate. And I give an example of that in a piece I wrote for the Boston Globe, but it's not the same thing as saying, you know, if they don't have vanilla, I'll have chocolate, because it's not just you going in as a customer and asking for something, and then if they don't have it, getting the next thing. It's bureaucrats are reallocating the votes of thousands and thousands of voters in an algebraic formula that's very complicated, and so it requires the voter to have a greater degree of knowledge and to be able to strategize how they're
candidates. I'm going to take this over to Evan. And Jennifer, if I could get you to just try to shorten your answers a little, because we have a lot of questions from callers I'd like to be able to get in. Evan, I want to give you a chance to respond to that one, and I'll go back to the phones.
It's actually quite simple. I mean, voters, children rank things all the time, and voters know how to do that. There's polls from Maine that showed that by the League of Women Voters that 90% of Maine voters found their experience with ranked choice voting to be either excellent or good. There is no evidence to support the claim that voters are confused by this. And in fact, courts have over and over again ruled that that's not true. And the reference
that's
to-
That's actually incorrect. That's
minority,
incorrect. There is evidence.
Wait. I'm going to let Evan finish his sentence, and then I'll let you rebut, Jennifer. Evan, go ahead and finish your sentence.
Yeah, I mean, opponents raise a study that's out of California that, it, to me, is like one of those studies that show that global warming isn't real, that has been discredited. And what I look to is the experience of people all around the world for more than 100 years that use ranked choice voting and like it. And it makes common sense because we rank things all the time in our lives.
All right, let's go and I'll let you rebut that, Jennifer, and then I'm
yeah,
back
I mean, it's
to the phones.
It's not true that courts have said what Evan says. I mean, what courts have said is that No. I've read these opinions. What courts have said is that challenges to ranked choice voting don't rise to the level of being discriminatory. That's very different than saying that people don't get confused when they look at the ballots. They do get confused when they look at the ballot. It may not have a discriminatory impact on elderly people or English language learners, but do they get confused? Yes, studies show that. Now,
time out to both of you. So I just want to stipulate, are we talking about the same study, or are the two of you referring to competing studies that draw different conclusions about whether or not it's confusing? Are you referring to the same study, the two of you, or not? Do you know?
I'm referring to some studies out of the San Francisco Bay Area that I've looked at.
Okay.
Right. And that's the one that I said is like global warming is fake.
No,
study.
That's not. Okay.
Well, no, it's not credible.
Listen, so here's where we're going to go. There are a set of studies. The two of you have different studies that you're bringing to the table on whether or not the issue of confusion is a real issue here. I want to move on from that just because there's so much more to cover in the debate and the things that you two bring to the table in terms of arguments. I want to go to the phones, 800-423-8255. We've got Sharon on the line from Pembroke. Sharon, go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you for this opportunity. I had a couple of questions, but I'll go to my most important one first.
Thank you, Sharon. Just the one, please.
Doesn't ranked choice voting provide more opportunity for the majority of residents in Massachusetts' voices to be heard?
Okay, so Evan, I let Jennifer answer the last question first because it was addressed to her. I'll let you answer this one first, and we'll go to Jennifer.
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer is yes. This is a pro-voter reform it's no surprise that it's got support all across the political spectrum because it will help voters have their voices heard.
And Jennifer,
It also has opposition across the political spectrum. I mean, this really isn't a partisan issue one way or the other. But I think... yes, it does increase choice, but at the same time, you have to weigh the pros and cons, because what it also does is it pulls candidates to the extreme. So it helps, for example, the Green Party, maybe, and it would help, you know, extremist right-wing parties on the other side. And so because ordinarily during a general election, right, a candidate like Joe Biden has to tack to the middle to get independence, maybe win over some Trump supporters. But in a ranked choice voting system, he would be more concerned with shoring up his left flank with Bernie Sanders. So, and the same would be true on the right, that, you know, the president would have to tack to the right and satisfy whatever right-wing extremist groups are, you know, launching candidates on their side. So it does give you more choice. The question is, do you want politicians to tack to the extremes?
Jennifer, isn't that in fact the case? So I just want to ask my own question as part of this discussion. Isn't that the case in primaries now, that that's what happens because of the way primaries themselves work?
Sure, it does tend to happen in primaries now to some extent. This would exacerbate the problem into general elections.
Thank you.
Actually,
Evan, go ahead.
It's the exact opposite. And there's so much evidence all over the place that this makes sure that candidates reflect the majority of voters, not the extremes. I understand that Jen is confused by this, because this is just simply not true. The incentive in this is to seek common ground.
I'm just going to call that for a second. I think we can say that neither of you are confused, and that you may interpret things differently, but that you're both really quite thoughtful and smart on these issues. Let me let you go ahead, Evan.
So the incentive is to seek common ground and to make sure that we reach out to the broad breadth of voters at where they are. And look, there is bipartisan support for this across the political spectrum. I haven't seen, from the standpoint of the opposition, there is committed ideological conservatives, I'll give you that. And the state Republican Party, which has been very pro-Trump,
and many Democratic politicians.
Opposed.
So Jennifer, wait a second.
Two California governors have vetoed this legislation. The very left-wing progressive jurisdictions of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Burlington, Vermont, tried it and repealed it because it was so complicated. So there are progressives and Democrats on the other side of the issue. You can list all the people who endorse your proposal till you're blue in the face, Evan, but that doesn't make a difference. There are also Democrats and Republicans
on my side. I'm going to break in on that. So Evan, here's the question that I would love to ask of you. In doing my homework preparing for this, I heard arguments that both suggested that one could see collaboration happen between candidates in a way that creates more moderate outcomes and greater attention to voters' needs, but also the risk of collusion between candidates to lock out another candidate, whether they might be unpalatable based on their party or race or et cetera. Isn't it possible that one could see both collaboration, which arguably would be a positive, but also collusion, which would arguably be a negative? I just want to hear you on that because I have seen both argued.
Yeah, I mean, it's, look, we have, as I said before, this isn't a perfect solution. So of course people can do things. But what we see in our current system are things like people putting up straw candidates like Kanye West in Wisconsin in order to split the vote. So of course there's always ways for people to do things. But the fact that in our today's system, it is an incentive for candidates to be divisive, to beat each other over the head with every issue rather than try to seek common ground, that campaigns are so negative, that there's this influence of special interests over the way we are governed. Ranked choice voting helps fix that. And that's a good thing, even if it's not entirely perfect.
Okay, I want to go back to the phones here. We have some more procedural kinds of questions I'd like to try to get answered, at least one more of those. Kathy's on the line from Lexington. Kathy, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question. I don't understand the basics of this. If Samoa, or whoever the first person was that spoke, said if Samoa. No one gets 50% of at least 50% of the vote, then they take the last name off and reapportion. What does that mean, and how many rounds do they go? And what if there's like three people that have the bottom list? Do they take all three of them off if they have the same number? That's what kind of information I need right now to even decide if I'm for or against.
Sure.
Thank you for that, Kathy. And Jennifer, before you answer, we've got one more procedural question like that. Let me get them both out, and then the two of you can answer both of them. Chris from Salem. Chris, what's your question?
Hi, my question is, under ranked choice voting, as a voter, is it up to me to leave candidates blank, or am I restricted? So if there are five candidates, can I only rank three, or can I rank all five and it's my choice whether or not I leave some blank?
Okay, thanks for that question. So Jennifer, I'm going to have you answer Chris's question, and then Evan will go back and have you answer Kathy's.
No, I want to answer Kathy's.
I know, but I'm going to have you answer Chris's. So go ahead and do that.
Chris's is a simple yes or no question. It's up to you whether you want to leave people off or not. Now, that does have implications. Like I said, if you leave people off your ballot, you risk that your ballot will become exhausted and discarded. On the other hand, if you rank everybody, you may be throwing your vote and your ultimate support behind somebody that you find very distasteful in the final analysis. Even if you put them last, you're still giving them a vote.
Okay, and to Cindy's question about how many rounds and what does it mean to reapportion, Evan?
Yeah, so when someone does not get 50% of the vote, then we do a recount. And if you're a voter and you voted for the person that came in last, whoever you put down as your second choice is now counted. So, and we keep doing that until someone has at least 50%. So if there were only three candidates running and you ranked two and your first choice was the last place finisher, now your second choice would count. And by simple mathematics, that would be the end of the counting. If there were seven, it could take longer. There could be a few rounds of counting, but it's always the same mechanism. And the purpose of it is to find out who the majority of voters most broadly support.
But here's the problem with that. And I think it's important the voters understand this. You're doing it until somebody has over 50%. But by that point, thousands of ballots could have been discarded. So what you end up with is somebody who has 50% of the votes that are counted, say, in the 10th round, not 50% of all the voters total. So you're ending up with another plurality candidate. And this isn't just a hypothetical. This happened in California, where the winner had 4,000 some odd votes, but 9,000 ballots had been discarded. So he had a majority of votes in the final round, but not a majority overall.
Can I just
anything to that, Evan, before I go to another question?
Yeah, because Yeah, that race that Jen's mentioning in California, the problem they had was that they were only letting people rank three candidates in a 9 or 10 person race. So the outcome that Jen talked about, which happened, was because of that flaw, which they've since fixed. And what we're proposing here in Massachusetts does not have that flaw in it. So you'll
always
be able to rank.
Although some people will still leave.
So no, let's stop. Let's stop there. I do want to move on. As part of our partnership with UMass Boston McCormick Graduate School, we have a question that was phoned into us from Krista Kelleher, who is the Research and Policy Director at the Center for Women in Politics and Public Policy at the McCormick School. Let's listen to that question.
According to the nonpartisan organization Represent Women, in 19 cities and counties where ranked choice voting has been in effect in the last decade, the number of successful candidates who are women and or persons of color has been going up. Isn't that a good thing?
Jennifer, I'm going to let you go first. I'm going to ask you to keep this answer to a minute so I can get Evan in and we have time to wrap.
Sorry, I didn't hear that. Wasn't what a good thing? The first part bleeped out for me.
That's okay. According to the nonpartisan nonprofit organization Represent Women, in 19 cities and counties where ranked choice voting has been in effect in the last decade, the number of successful candidates who are women and or people of color has been going up.
Sure, that's a great thing. I'm willing to acknowledge there are a lot of positive things about ranked choice voting. That's one of them. Another one, as Evan said, as I do think it reduces negative campaigning. That's true. But the question is, do those positives outweigh the negatives of confusion, the negatives of decreasing access for English language learners, elderly people, even sophisticated voters like myself who might be confused as to how to strategically rank my ballot? And to me, the answer is no, those advantages don't outweigh the negatives. But I do acknowledge there are many advantages.
And Evan.
Yeah, I love the common ground that Jen and I are reaching on this. And there's great truth to the fact that it's a good thing when these kinds of outcomes happen. And it's why among our endorsers are, you know, Tanisha Sullivan, the head of the Boston branch of the NAACP, Common Cause, Amplify Latinx, the Massachusetts Immigrant and Refugee Advocacy Coalition. So this is a pro-voter reform that to me is an inspiring opportunity to make change for the better.
So we don't have a lot of time left. We have a lot of people calling. I'm sorry, callers, we're not going to be able to get to more of your questions because there is one other dimension that I just want to touch on with both of you. Evan, I'll let you answer first, and then we'll go to Jennifer. If this question gets passed, will there be constitutional questions that remain? And what are the implications of that? Evan, if you could keep your answer to a minute or less, I'd appreciate it.
We've worked for years with leading attorneys and other scholars to make sure that everything we're doing is consistent with both the Massachusetts Constitution and the federal Constitution. Federal courts have ruled that ranked choice voting is constitutional, as have courts here in Massachusetts. So it's constitutional and valid.
Jennifer, same, if you could keep it to a minute or less.
Yeah, I think there could be a constitutional problem with part of it. Article 14 of the Mass Constitution says that in general elections for state offices, so governor, you know, treasurer, attorney general, quote, the person having the highest number of votes shall be deemed and declared to be elected. So I do think there will be a challenge to the application of it to state officers, and I think that challenge has a very good chance of winning.
Okay, I'm sort of threading the needle on the end of the program here. So I think now is a good time to give you each a chance to spend about a minute just with your summary thoughts, especially based on the questions you got from listeners. Since Jennifer just spoke, Evan, I'll have you go first. If you could keep it to a minute or less, please.
Yeah, I mean, ranked choice voting is a way to help fix the problems we face in our democracy today. Ranked choice voting helps you not have to feel as if you're voting for the lesser of two evils in an election. It helps build consensus among candidates. It gives voters more choices. It gives voters a greater voice. And the endorsements we have from all across the political spectrum among such respected leaders and good government reform organizations reflect the work that has been done over the last several years by thousands and thousands of volunteers all across Massachusetts who are really the lifeblood of this campaign. So you can see much more at yesontworcv.com. And we look forward to earning your support to vote yes on question two.
Now I'll turn to you, Jennifer Braceras.
At a time when anxiety about the integrity of our election system is at an all-time high, let's not add complicated layers of bureaucracy that increase opportunities for corruption. And let's not discourage voter participation with confusing ballots and layers of complication that lead to unforeseen and hard-to-explain results. Ranked choice voting does have some advantages, but overall, the disadvantages far outweigh the advantages, and we shouldn't mess with our current system at this time.
Okay, we left a lot of callers with additional questions, and some of them are procedural callers. So for those of you who still have questions about how this will work, I'd like to send you to two resources. We have explainers of both of the ballot questions on our website at WBUR.org. And also, you can learn more about these ballot questions if you have an Amazon device at home by going to asking your Amazon device to play Mass Ballot Guide. It's a tool that will help you understand the ballot questions better. This has been a helpful conversation. It's been a pleasure to moderate this debate on ballot question two, which was on ranked choice voting, brought to you by WBUR and the McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies at UMass Boston. I want to thank both of our guests. First, Evan Falchuk, chair of the Yes on 2 campaign and a board member of Voter Choice Massachusetts, the advocacy group pushing the ballot initiative. Evan, I want to thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And also Jennifer Braceras, who is on the board of the Massachusetts Fiscal Alliance, representing the no side today and a regular commentator with us here on Radio Boston. Jennifer, thanks to you as well.
Yeah, no problem.
Listeners, there are two ballot questions this year, and next Monday, October 19th, we will debate the other one. Ballot question one, motor vehicle mechanical data, also known as the right to repair. We'll take your questions then, just as we have today. That's next Monday, October 19th. And that is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Walter Wuthman. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. Engineering today is by Jimmy Kiesling and Marquise Neal. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.